Studio 360 is supported by edX. Until now, quality education seemed out of reach. edX is an online learning destination where you can take fascinating free courses from universities such as Harvard and MIT. Go to edx.org/studio360 to start learning for free today.
This is Studio 360, and I'm Kurt Anderson. If planet Earth's got one ultimate fanboy who achieves his dreams beyond his wildest dreams, that'd be the actor and screenwriter Simon Pegg. The title of his memoir is Nerd Do Well. He grew up in the 1970s and 80s devouring Hollywood genre pictures. So when he and his friends Edgar Wright and Nick Frost decided to make a movie a dozen years ago, it was Shaun of the Dead, a brilliant and hilarious homage to the zombie films of their youth, just before zombies became pop culturally bigger than ever.
Mom! I'm coming!
Mom, are you okay? Are you okay?
I don't think Jill and Derek do live here.
They followed that with Hot Fuzz, a spoofy buddy cop film, and then The World's End, about old friends having a nostalgic pub crawl that's interrupted by an alien invasion.
What did he say, sir?
Newton Haven has been taken over by robots.
Did you believe him?
And meanwhile, Simon Pegg became a fixture in actual Hollywood action fantasy blockbusters, like the Star Treks, he's Scotty, and the Mission Impossibles, where he plays the hero's sidekick, Benji.
Shut down the fuel pump.
Mechanicals are locked out.
What about the electrical system?
Oh, that might work.
Benji! Open the door!
Yeah, okay.
That's Jeremy Renner, Ving Rhames, Tom Cruise, and Simon Pegg in the latest edition, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Simon Pegg, welcome to Studio 360. Actually, welcome back to Studio 360.
Nice to be here after 8 years of absence.
Rogue Nation is your third Mission Impossible movie.
It is, yeah.
And your character has gone from being the comic relief tech wizard in the background to the absolute out front star. And my reaction was, wow, this movie without this character, and indeed without your performance of him, would suck. I mean, that you make it and you bring this panache and humor and not just comic relief, the whole thing, and written into the plot, importantly.
Yeah. When I first appeared in Mission 3, as you say, I was just the kind of lab guy. And in Ghost Protocol,
you were Benji's Q.
Exactly. I was Ethan's Q. In Ghost Protocol, I was at in the field for the first time. It was like he was kind of puppyish and nascent in his abilities and his experiences. And in this one, you know, there's been a real evolution since I first played this character 10 years ago. And it's been really fun to kind of track that. Benji is a great way in for the audience. He's a kind of human being. He's not a superhero. He's very much an ordinary person who finds himself in an extraordinary situation.
He's the definite non-android character.
Yeah, and it's like a great way for the audience. It's a great sort of a device for the audience to travel into the action with and see things through Benji's eyes. So I became the kind of the everyman, as is my wont.
And do you, as is Tom Cruise's wont, perform your own stunts in this film?
You kind of have to. Otherwise, you just get left behind, you know. I mean, the thing that drives Tom, I think, is just he has an obsessive passion about giving the audience a kind of authentic experience that isn't
a totally fake, but beautifully authentic seeming.
Yeah, it's like it's not augmented by. I mean,
no green screen. Less green screen.
Yeah, I'm not decrying green screen or CG because they're incredible tools and they've opened up a whole universe of possibilities to us as filmmakers. But when you know something is digitally created, there's a degree of separation or a degree of distance you suddenly get, which it doesn't quite.
I don't care as much.
Feel, yeah. There's no physical presence.
Yeah, Tom Cruise could actually die if he fell off that plane.
Yeah, and he really could have done it. On the day, it was even more scary because we didn't know he was going to survive. But
just rewrite it a little bit.
Yeah, obviously. Well, there's been no, you know, when you see it, there's been no national mourning. You know, he's okay. But you're still thinking, oh my God, he's on the side of that plane.
Yeah. As you say, you were on this show 8 years ago with your collaborator pals Edgar Wright and Nick Frost talking about Hot Fuzz, which was your spoof of American action movies and crazy
love letter to
crazy gunplay. Yes, homage / parody. And now you're part of this giant action movie franchise with crazy gunplay. Why not? Have you thought about, as you must, make reteaming with Nick and Edgar and doing a kind of Bourne Mission Impossible spoof?
Well, I feel like, you know, we've never been spoof artists. We've always been kind of, you know, sort of people have said, oh.
That's why I love them.
They've reduced what we've done to kind of like spoofs. And I mean, certainly Shaun of the Dead isn't, because it's a zombie film that happens to be funny.
Yes.
You know, with Hot Fuzz, there were more sort of parodic elements to that film because we were, you know, you put the American action genre into an English village.
That's inherently funny.
It becomes funny.
Yeah.
With The World's End, it was more about kind of, you know, the sort of British tradition of social science fiction that we were kind of embracing to say something about friendship and addiction and all that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like we're not, it's not like we pick a genre and think, let's make fun of it, you know. Whatever we do next together will not have to be bound by the criteria we set up with the Cornetto films, which was that they are British set, contemporary.
Set in a little town.
You know, yeah, about small towns kind of life, and also, you know, shot through the prism of a specific genre. Whatever we do next might be completely different.
Right. And I love Shaun of the Dead. I loved Hot Fuzz. But The World's End, I felt like I was on acid, in the best way possible. It was amazing and ambitious, and I just say go see it. It's an insane film.
Yeah.
In between Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, director and soon-to-be mogul J.J. Abrams cast you in Mission Impossible 3 and then two more. And then J.J. Abrams has also cast you in two Star Trek movies and let you write the upcoming one. And now he's also cast you in his new Star Wars. J.J. Abrams, good friend to have.
I've got some bad things on JJ, and I
go for it.
I keep pulling them out. No, I don't. You know what? It was such a strange. I think one of the most significant phone calls I ever got was JJ Abrams on line one for you, Simon. Well, we were writing Hot Fuzz, and this call came in, and it was the guy who was making Alias, that show that was really good, and I thought, oh, this will be interesting. And he said he'd seen Shaun, and he was directing, you know, his first feature, which was Mission Impossible 3, and would you like to come and be in it? And I was very excited and at the prospect of being asked. Now I would count him among my best friends. And you know, we were shooting, he was shooting Star Wars in the UK, and I was just around the corner. So obviously he knew I loved that story. So I ended up.
And you're like Jar Jar Binks's son?
Oh my God, heaven forbid. That's one thing I can tell you that I'm not.
Okay. Now that you're in both Star Trek and Star Wars, you're just the man to make my dream happen. I've, for years on this show, wanted to do a whole documentary in which I am confused about the difference between Star Wars and Star Trek, and ask William Shatner what it was like to work for George Lucas and stuff.
Yeah.
So
I think, well, the funny thing is that's often I think it's kind of a misnomer in that Star Trek and Star Wars are wildly different things, albeit science fiction, albeit with the same one word in the title. They're both, you know, arguably science fiction. Star Wars is science fantasy. They're both set in space, but it's completely different space. I mean,
yes,
Star Wars
is
set a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Star Trek is set in our future. Star Wars is not about us.
But
Star
they're
Trek
not
is about
orcs
us.
And gods, which is what I think of as fantasy. But yes, I get
no,
your point.
No, but I think what Star Trek does is it posits a future for the human race.
Yes.
It's about our future.
Yeah.
Star Wars is about a completely separate
right.
thing. It could be a different
right.
universe.
Right.
It just so happens that there are spaceships involved. But you don't say that Bullet and a Jim Carrey film are the same just because they both got cars in them.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean?
Well said. See, but this is why I could do my mock confusion about the difference. Earlier this year, you kind of caused a ruckus among your more fanboyish fans over this thing you said about superhero movies dumbing down cinema.
That's not what I said. That's what the ruckus was about.
Okay,
it was reduced to that clickbait
Please,
headline.
Please, correct it.
What I said was it was interesting to me that, and this is something that various cultural theorists predicted, which was that adults now consume things which long ago might have been considered childish.
Been saying it for decades.
You know, like comic books and video games. These are things that have been...
Spielberg and Lucas started it, and here we are.
And it's called, and it's this thing, this idea, Baudrillard talked about it, this infantilization of society, you know.
Yes, indeed.
I'm a participant in that. A lot of my interests are these things which might have been deemed childish a long time ago. The thing I said about dumbing down was more about the onus becoming about spectacle rather than story. Now, it wasn't an attack on superhero movies as such.
Or CG or whatever.
Or CG or anything. It was more about the fact that if you're going to have these amazing kind of spectacle films, it's great to underpin them with some
right.
thought. You know, that's what fantasy and science fiction is about. These things totally. Are allegorical. They've always been about us and say things about what we're scared of, what we're preoccupied with. And so for it to just be about, you know, robots fighting, it's a bit of a waste in a way.
Well said. And well said, exactly the way in which one should distinguish the good from the bad among all these things.
Yeah.
And speaking of clickbait, on public radio, Baudrillard. You know, that'll do it for us. So now you're 45 years old. Speaking of the word cinema,
yeah.
Do you want to, like, do David Hare plays and act in Martin Scorsese films?
I would like to do a serious movie. I mean, it depends. I've kind of positioned myself as a comedic actor. I never intended to do that particularly. I was, studying Shakespeare and David Hare and all those playwrights. And I did a lot of serious acting as a student, and it's something I'd like to have a go at. But it's whether or not people are willing to allow me to,
Sure.
Because often the audience will watch just thinking, when is he going to do the funny thing,
And will you return to your buddies?
Oh, absolutely. Edgar and I have been talking the last couple of weeks about, because I'm working in Vancouver on Star Trek. He's down in L.A. We're trying to hook up for the weekend and sort of hash out a slate for the next sort of 10 years.
We don't say hook up anymore because that means something else.
Oh,
now.
Does that mean have sex?
It does.
Maybe we'll do that too.
Great. You heard it here. Baudrillard and the sex scandal between two friends. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's not do 8 years next time.
Okay.
Let's come back sooner.
For your directorial debut.
Absolutely.
Good.
I'll be here.
All right. You can see Simon Pegg right now in Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation, which is everywhere.